Snooches booches, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 262. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as ever, is James Jones.
I'm first today.
John Lindemann.
You know how we do.
And Greg Leahy.
Oh, hey, everyone.
We got that this week, at least.
Leahy.
That is alarming. Please.
Leahy. Greg Leahy.
So that's the end of this episode. We'll see you next week.
As you can tell, we're happy to be here tonight, and we have a fun show lined up in the second segment.
But in the first segment, yeah, it sucks.
No, when we get to the second segment, we're actually going to have a preview of the fall lineup from Nintendo, which might be short, but there are some exciting things on there. We're going to talk about some of our favorites and maybe also bring in a few games that we're looking forward to on other platforms. But first, new business. This is where we talk about the games that we are playing. James.
So, I did finally put a bullet in Xenoblade, which is probably the most apt term for it. Because if I ever touch a new game plus, so help me God, I'll need to cut my own hands off. That's not to say I don't love the game. It's amazing, but that is a fucking long game.
What was your final time?
So my final time was about 75 hours. But
okay.
The last hour plus is unsavable. It's the final rush through the boss. Hmm. And I did multiple passes at it and having to come back, level up, and took another pass at it until I finally managed to break through that barrier. So that's probably a few extra hours tacked on.
Now, do you feel that's kind of cheap? Like, do you feel that they could have really spaced it out and just made it not easier, but more?
A little bit. It would have been nice to not have, because the first boss I got through, and then, you know, I struggle with the second and struggle with successive bosses. But I still had to get through that first one again, which is just, I mean, considering you completely heal after every battle, it's kind of like, am I really gaining anything by refighting this guy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, from a story standpoint, I understand why they did it. But still, it was kind of obnoxious.
Well, I can announce that I now have Xenoblade. I got it, picked it up today, and spent another half hour preparing my Wii to play it, and I finally got it to boot up. Sort of a complicated multi-stage process that's not terribly intuitive, but I got it working. So I haven't played it. I've literally just looked at the title screen, and I think I looked through the options menu.
I didn't know the game had an options menu.
If you were looking forward to not hearing about Xenoblade, then too bad, because I'm super pumped to try it out.
But there's so many other games on the Wii worth talking about.
Yeah, I'm not going to, I mean, obviously, I never burn through games like James does, and this will be no exception. It's going to be...
Well, I mean, it took me 3 weeks. I mean, I wouldn't say I burned through it.
Yeah, but it's probably going to take Greg 3 months, and...
If you're lucky.
Yeah, I'll be somewhere in between, most likely. But, I mean, as John said, there's so much other stuff. I just picked up Eco and Shadow of the Colossus HD Collection.
Someone didn't hear the on the Wii modifier.
Yeah,
exactly.
Somebody missed the joke.
Well, James has James years, kind of like dog years. 3 weeks for a game for him is like a colossal amount of time.
3 weeks is a long time for me to beat a game.
It is. I say that non-jokingly, even though...
I mean, that is literally 3 days out of 3 weeks of my life. Effectively... 1/7 of my life was devoted to playing that game during that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
That is absurd. But it was worth it, and I really did enjoy it. And I say I'll have to cut my hands off if I play a new game plus, but I have a deep suspicion that at some point when the Wii schedule completely dries out, we're still 6 months out from Wii U, I'll be firing up my level 80 characters to go romp through the first 5 hours of the game, one-hit killing every boss.
Hey, James. I don't want an answer from you. I just want to pose the question and let you stew in it for a while.
Mm.
You're going to have to decide between Xenoblade and Radiant Historia for your game of the year.
I know.
And I'm really curious. I don't want to hear it now because I'm sure you haven't put enough thought into it.
No, I have put thought into it.
Well, I mean, we'll probably come back to this topic in general, but...
I mean, obviously Zelda's still a player in there, but Zelda's going to have...
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so we have to wait for Zelda, but... I mean, based on your love for those games, I'm going to be really curious to hear how you end up on that. I mean, I'm curious how I'll end up on it, of course, too, but you've talked so much about both games.
It's a very good year for RPGs, assuming you're willing to go the extra mile of either tracking down a copy of an Atlas game or bringing a game over from another continent. Mm-hmm. Or happen to live in Europe, which point you have to do the exact same thing. It's tracking down a copy of a relatively rare Nintendo game or bring a game over from another continent.
Well, in both cases, the games were reprinted due to high demand. So it seems like they both did better than expected.
Better than expected, but still didn't make it to the other place.
Yeah, well.
Now, we do have to wait for Zelda, but Zelda's going to have to be really, really good. And Twilight Princess would have lost badly in this comparison.
You know, I like Twilight Princess. I do occasionally make jokes at its expense. But
yeah, we know you like Twilight Princess.
I did review that game very highly, and I do like it. I played it almost twice all the way through. But from what I've seen of Skyward Sword, I have to say my expectations for Skyward Sword are much higher.
They are.
I expect it to be a much better game. But that's save it for the next segment.
Yes. But to your point, I have actually spent time thinking about this going, son of a bitch. However, I do have a DS game I've been playing because my NOE published list of games continues. And I have for the DS Solitarobo Red the Hunter, courtesy of Xseed, who has so graciously brought this game to North America minus a bunch of extra U's and the word bloody. That's their description of their localization process, not mine. So, real basic, it's anthropomorphic animals on robots. I mean, we've done enough coverage on the site that I would imagine that most of our listeners are pretty familiar with the game.
We've discussed it on the show before as well, in advance of the European release, just the bare basics of it.
It's a beautiful game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very beautiful game. And it's the graphic style reminds me a lot of the Zelda games on the DS. The same kind of polygonal world with these sometimes 2D sprites thrown in and lots of animated but still relatively pixelated models. Because they're basically pushing the DS for all it can do.
But is it kind of overhead like Zelda?
No, it's usually straight on.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a lot like the fixed camera RPGs of the PlayStation era. Like Final Fantasy IX is a good example, where the camera was fixed in one position that might pan around the screen, but ultimately you're running through a set.
Okay.
But there is a lot of platforming. The combat system is basically grab things and throw them. Basically, the game's broken up into these episode-like quests where the overarching plot is broken up into literally like TV-style episodes, like it's a cartoon. And one event is comprised in an episode, and then you get the to be continued, and you get the next chapter after that. And they're relatively short experiences, and then they're augmented by these quests you can get as you progress through the game. And you can level up using these quests and earn money that way, because ultimately you don't get a lot of money in the field. What I found, though, is that as much as excitement as I had for this game, there is a lot of boring filler. A lot of these quests in the game, which really, if you play all the quests, will make up probably at least half your playtime, are not very eventful. Some of them are interesting. Some of them are kind of funny. There's one where you're trying to protect a famous pop singer from a stalker. That's kind of amusing. But ultimately, a lot of the mini quests are, it's the box stacking competition! And it's like, what? This town has a competition on who can stack boxes? And literally, it is a game where you will go and you will spend the next 2 or 3 minutes of the quest stacking boxes with a time limit.
Horrible. That sounds horrible.
It does. Yeah. And once you complete stacking boxes, you will earn some money, and then you can go buy upgrades to your ship and deal with more enemies more easily.
And that's optional?
It is optional, but it's okay. If you want to level up and earn money, box stacking is probably a good way to do it.
Now, do you need to level up and earn money?
Money, I mean, I have a good amount of money saved up, but leveling up is important.
Really? Weren't you saying this is kind of easy, though?
It is very easy.
It's one of the primary criticisms I've read of the game is that it's sort of laughably easy.
So to describe how easy this game is, I haven't lost at anything ever, and I'm 10 hours into the game. And there's never been a risk of losing at anything.
So it doesn't stand a reason that you could have leveled up less?
But a lot of times it's not got anything to do with leveling up. It's just that the enemies aren't good.
Okay, then why do you need to level up?
Because there are bosses occasionally where it probably matters.
But it's not yet to be determined.
There's one boss that was of any notable difficulty, but still, it wasn't that hard.
See, I mean, this was something that put me off the game, how much of a cakewalk it sounds like.
Well, yeah, it's why I'm always kind of iffy on, like, Kirby games, even though they might sound cool. You know, I mean, Kirby's Epic Yarn was, like, the very bare minimum of interactivity, quite frankly. I mean, it's so easy that you almost don't have to try.
Yeah.
So that's really the floor for me.
So there are some story mandatory quests, which you have to complete. But to get to them, you have to have leveled up your, quote, hunter level, which is different than your just regular level. And you level that up by completing quests. So you may not have to complete all the quests, but I've completed all of the quests. And what the mandatory hunter level was for the last story quest, you have to complete a damn sight near all of them.
Yeah, so it's a gating factor.
Essentially, it's like connecting bananas in Donkey Kong. I mean, it's not fun, particularly. I mean, some of the quests are fine. Some of the writing in the game is actually kind of clever. Some of the actual story missions are fine. But I made a joke on Twitter that so the game takes place in Shepherd Kingdom, so there's context here. I tweeted, does no one in the Shepherd Kingdom own a fucking forklift? And then I was followed by Forklifts Canada, which I thought was amusing. But
of course, because forklifts are so big in Canada.
I don't know.
There's an entire subculture around forklifts.
It's a company selling forklifts in Canada, apparently just following whoever talks about forklifts. But there are enough forklift-like missions that I think it's a relevant question to ask. I periodically go through phases where I just get bored with the game, and then there are some stretches where the game is interesting enough that I want to continue playing, but usually I don't have any play sessions longer than an hour because I just get kind of tired of it. Yeah. Now, thankfully, in an hour, you can get through, including the subquests, two or three chapters. So, I mean, you can kind of barrel through the game if you really want to, but it just the game's kind of middling at the moment. I mean, it's got a lot of positive qualities that are just sort of presentational and the charm of the game overall, and there are some elements of gameplay that are interesting or enjoyable, but there's a lot of just fluff, and to an extent that's probably exacerbated by the fact that the game I just played before it so completely trims down all the fluff as to make it as felt as possible.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a tough act to follow, but still I feel like I would be getting bored with a lot of what this game is doing anyway. I just wish there was some more action in it. I mean, there's a lot of just going place to place and finding drinks from vending machines for famous singers. I mean, it's all a bit weird. I mean, a great example of where the game gets truly, utterly weird and yet at the same time not particularly enjoyable is there is a character who asked me to hand out disaster preparedness pamphlets in town. And as you hand them out to people, each one of them reads you a line from said disaster preparedness pamphlet and then pretends to be utterly amazed at advice like, have extra water around because in the case of a major disaster, the water pipes might not be working. It is the most bizarre experience I've had in a game in a long time.
It just sounds like they're trying to put like a weird spin on a bunch of tedious bullshit.
They are. And it almost feels worse when they do that. And so, I mean, sometimes it's legitimately amusing, but probably not for the reason they wanted it to be.
Okay, I think it's better if we stop talking about Soul to Robo and wait for your review. I can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah.
Well, John's up next, and he has a Nintendo game to talk about.
Yeah, I got the download of Four Swords Anniversary Edition for DSi, and I'm liking it so far. You know, it makes me miss games in this series that are not Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks. You know, it boils down the puzzle solving in the kind of overhead view games to a very, you know, focused point. Right now, I think I've played through to, I guess, the first Death Mountain. I think there's, I don't know, does that repeat or something? Because I know there's actually more. I thought that I'm like, well, you know, I've just beat the first two areas, so it looks like I figured that there would be one more hidden area, like after you get through like Vadi's Castle.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, after reading Zach's review, there's apparently a lot more to the game than I thought there was, which is impressive considering it. You know, it's a free title.
Well, what it is, you've got the first few levels before you kind of complete it, as it were.
Yeah,
there's some sort of randomizing element to those, where if you play them again, they'll be a bit different.
Yeah,
and then once you beat Vati, you've got the retro stuff. that's new for this 25th anniversary edition.
Yeah.
So you've got like the I've just peeked at like the Link to the Past level, which sort of is sort of themed around Hyrule Castle from that game and stuff. So yeah, you've got the music is ripped straight out of it and stuff. So
cool.
Those extra levels look like they could be pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. So I haven't played with anybody else yet. So I'm just going through one player, which is really not bad at all. The boss battles are probably the most impressive part of the gameplay to me because it's seldom I feel like co-op gaming is really the redheaded stepchild.
Well, if you had bought 4 GBAs and 4 Link cables.
If only.
And 4 copies of the game.
And 3 prostitutes so you could play it with them.
But I mean, I feel like even like with console games, I mean, you seldom see, I mean, games that would be perfect for co-op don't even have co-op. It's nice to play a good co-op game every once in a while, even if you're only cooperating with yourself, so to speak.
Whoa, now that sounds too personal.
Yeah, I've been playing it a little bit too. Not I had other stuff too, so I've only been playing it kind of here and there. But I just beat the plant boss, so I'm fairly early, I think. But I'm liking it so far. I think I wish that the areas had a real map, because the like down on the touch screen, you've got a map. But it doesn't really show you anything. It doesn't show where you've been or, you know, the outline of the level. And there doesn't seem to be a map you can find to fill that out like there are in other Zelda games.
Yeah.
So I don't really know why that's there or how that... I guess if you had multiple people, it would show you where all the other characters are.
Yeah, that's right.
That might be useful. But as it is, I'm kind of getting lost because the levels are fairly open and it's just hard to tell whether I've been to a place before.
I think the idea was that they didn't want you to be able to easily navigate because essentially you were racing the other players.
Yeah.
And they basically were hoping that players would get lost and then one player would find the way and they'd try to follow each other to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately the areas aren't that big, so you really don't get lost.
Yeah.
There's typically only about 3 or 4 areas to really investigate, and then you're on to the boss.
Yeah, it's the weird thing about having the one player here. I improve its inclusion. I've dabbled with it a bit, but of course... Because it's going for that competitive and cooperative kind of multiplayer where you've got, you know, who comes out on top with the most rupees at the end and all that kind of stuff. It does take that, obviously, is lost when you're just doing it by yourself.
Yeah, I kind of looked at like sort of a score attack kind of thing, like how high, how many can I actually get?
Oh, yeah, there's still that. There's still a score element because of how many rupees you can find. But it's the thing about with 2 people, I've managed to play through the non-retro areas all in the co-op. And the thing that's nice about them is it sort of makes the busy work of Zelda, you know, just opening chests and like cutting down bushes and all that kind of stuff, fun because you're doing it competitively in a way, you know, trying to find more rupees than the other guy or just screwing with them, throwing them around. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the puzzle solving that there is, or, you know, the bosses are definitely good in co-op because they've got these little sort of wrinkles to them, like where you've got color coded weak spots, but like you'll see what's the weak spot for the other guy. Mm-hmm. So you have to tell him what you're seeing, and then he can use that information to actually attack without hurting himself or stuff like that. You know, so they make some clever use out of that kind of thing.
Yeah, enjoying it a lot so far. And let's see, what else? I also started playing Demon's Souls in a completely different kind of vein. Again, Demon's Souls, you know, one of those classic titles that I've had around, sitting around for 2 years and just never even put much into it. I put like 3 hours into it and put it down again. But
I'm surprised, John. It's always been described as such a sort of breezy title to get through. I'm really surprised someone with your willpower wasn't able to crack it.
Yeah, it's tough. I know, it's pretty surprising. But yeah, so I picked that up the other night. Just, you know, put it back in. I'm like, okay, I'm going to, you know, because, you know, Dark Souls just came out. And so I'm kind of like, all right, you know, Demon's Souls is always a title that's been sitting in my backlog, much like Shadow Complex, very much the same boat, where it's just, I know it's good, but for whatever reason, it just didn't really catch me at the time that I actually bought it. So I went back and it's really good. I played through actually to the first boss, which is Phalanx, which is this pretty much this big blob that kind of shoots out the spears at you and has a bunch of blobs around it that you kind of have to hack away at and get rid of to get to the boss who's behind their shield.
That took me forever.
Really?
To beat. It was exciting, but it was a real war of attrition for me to kill that thing. I was, like, hanging onto the thread when I finally finished it off.
Like, how were you trying to kill it? Like, just hacking it? Like, because, I mean, I beat it first try, no problem.
I think I was trying to, like, get behind it, like, lure it to a corner and then run around behind it and hack at it before it could turn around or something. I don't remember exactly.
See, I did it all with, I forget even what it's called, but it's like, it's the wand that shoots, like, the soul arrows. But yeah, I mean, I just pretty much just rolled in there and I beat that thing first try.
Cool.
And that's kind of what the game is like. That's kind of one of the things that's rewarding about it is the fact that it's like a lot of the enemies, it reminds me kind of like Monster Hunter in this sense, even though it has controls that actually make sense and are fun to play. It's very much like any given enemy will attack you the same way every time. So, you know, you just have to go in there and analyze their technique and figure out your approach to each type of enemy.
Yeah, I remember, I rented it from Gamefly, I think, and I played a little bit past where you are, but not much farther.
Yeah.
And I didn't quit it because the game was too hard. I quit it because I felt like I had no idea what to do next, and I didn't really care. Like, the part that I played through, I enjoyed well enough. I didn't love it, but yeah. it gets, after you beat that first boss, the game kind of really opens up a lot, mm-hmm. and I peeked into a few different areas, and none of them excited me very much, and they were all really hard, and I didn't want to keep playing through the first place over and over again to grind.
Yeah.
So I pretty much was like, I think I've had enough. Like, I sort of get what it's about. I don't really understand the appeal of it, but at least I know what the game is.
The other game I played is the Uncharted beta, Uncharted 3 beta, which is the one where if you go into Subway, you know, you buy a drink or whatever and you get the code and you can go to subway.com.
I don't want to live in this world anymore.
Yeah. It's it's funny. I was like, all right, sure. You know, I'll pay $1.75 or something for a drink and, you know.
You're part of the problem.
You can download it. Yeah.
James prefers the world in which you buy string cheese and get a copy of Beyond Good and Evil for PC.
I'm going to go jump off a building.
But yeah, I mean, I'm really liking it so far. That's the thing. Like Uncharted 2, I didn't really play too much at all online because I'm not really too big into like third-person shooters, or at least playing against other people in third-person shooters. But what I think they do, and I'm not too sure.
John just likes Gears for the muscles.
You'd be proud of me, James. I didn't even get Gears of War 3, so.
1 and 2, fuck it, got them.
I haven't beat Gears of War 2, so I'm holding the line, James. I'm holding the line that I must beat Gears of War 2 at some point, much like Mass Effect.
This is John's Verdun.
Whatever, I'll break all my rules before the podcast is over, probably. But
yeah, the French didn't hold Verdun either.
No, we're all very proud of you, John.
thank you. Yeah, but in Uncharted 2, I'm not too sure if they did this, but in Uncharted 3, they set the areas. You'll be on like a plane that's about to take off, or you'll be on a train. So like say like on it when you're on the train, there'll be two trains on the track. And you'll be on one, and all your enemies will be on the other, and you basically sit there, and you have to go up on the roof of the train and shoot at people across the big gap, and you can, you know, fall off, so you have to make sure you don't fall off, and stuff like that. But then it'll actually arrive, and then you get off, and then you continue fighting your opponents at the stop.
Couldn't you just stay in the train and then hope their train keeps going?
But it's cool because it switches things up.
Just a thought.
That sounds cool, the whole dynamic levels thing. I really like that, actually. It's a little bit like Smash Brothers, if you think about it.
Yeah, it was really unexpected. Like, I thought it was really, really cool. I actually wish that more, you know, first-person shooter and third-person shooter games did that. Because I think it makes it less grindy kind of thing. Because you wind up, with any shooters like that, you just wind up playing. I mean, you start to know areas like the back of your hand, like, and you just get so sick of doing them over and over and over again. But when you have like kind of like effectively two parts to play through, it changes things up. And, you know, maybe you're not good at like when you're fighting on the trains, but once it gets to the stop, you're better in that area. So you can kind of make a comeback. So like that's really, really cool. And there's other, they do other things too. Like they have areas in Syria or something like that. So there'll be like a sandstorm will blow through. And, you know, everything will go dark. And so you really can't see anything. So you have to kind of sneak up on them and they won't be able to see you. So there's a lot of cool stuff they do like that. So it's definitely impressed me in the sense that I figured it would just be like any other third-person shooter out there. Nothing really too crazy compared to Uncharted 2, which didn't really impress me too much.
Yeah, I never played any. I own Uncharted 2, never touched the multiplayer. I mean, I didn't turn it on a single time.
Same with me.
Yeah, from your description, I might actually try it on Uncharted 3. I mean, I might as well. I'm going to buy it anyway. So,
yeah.
But you know, I didn't think it was going to be worth my time in the last game. And it sounds like this might actually be really cool and especially if these are places that you don't visit in the single player. And I feel like it sounds like they're really big set pieces, and they probably will be from the single player.
Yeah.
You know, the environments are so amazing in Uncharted. That's one of the major reasons you play the games, is because they, you know, they have these crazy places that you go to, and they look amazing, and they're fun to explore. Mm-hmm. So if they have some of those that are exclusive to multiplayer, then I would think it's worth my time just to check that out, because that's a big part of the reason I like the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too sure if they're going to have anything, you know, that you can only play online, but the one thing I will say that kind of sets this apart, I think, even from other third-person shooters like say, Gears of War, is the fact that you can climb on everything. So, I mean, it opens things up in terms of, you know, being able to evade people, sneak up on people. Like, you can do things like, if somebody has their back to you and they're up on a ledge shooting at someone, you can climb up the wall behind them, pull them down, and kill them. Like, you can just you can do really, really cool stuff that you can't do in other shooters.
I like that. I like the traversal, you know, I like the options. When you're playing online, I've said this a lot of times, but when you play a game online, the more open it is and the more freedom of expression and the more flexibility and strategy that you give a player, the more fun it is. And that's why Smash Brothers is more fun than other fighting games, I think, because it's less regimented.
Yeah, and also lets players kind of figure stuff out on their own. Like, you'll get people figuring out ways to kill other players in ways that you never even would have thought, just because they've been given this tool set to do so. Right? Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a big thing in the game. And I mean, you can kind of, like, power up all of your skills and everything, so you can, you know, make it so that you can climb walls really, really quickly. Because when you first start out, it's kind of a chore. Like, in other words, people can snipe you fairly easily because you kind of have to slow down when you climb walls. But you can speed that up, so you can just, like, in no time, you're hopping all over the place, climbing up walls. So it's a lot of fun.
Very cool, man. All right, well, I'll go next. And one game that I've played quite a bit this past week, and I know Greg played through this too, but it's Super Mario Land DOS. And I really like this game. I never owned it as a kid. I never owned a Game Boy. I think I've said that before.
Yeah, I never did either.
You all suck.
And I have played Super Mario Land 2 on my friend's Game Boys, but I never played through it. You know, like, I'd play it for just a few minutes and tried a couple of levels. So I had it, you know, I knew there was one level that was sort of inside a giant Mario statue, and I knew there was a space level where you had a spacesuit on and you could jump really high. I knew a couple of things like that, but I'd never really played through the game. And since it's on eShop now for $4, I was like, yeah, I totally want to play that. And I'm so glad I did, because one thing I told you guys earlier when we were doing the prep for the show is that it's really kind of hard to believe that this is even on the same system as Super Mario Land. Because, the first land is so primitive. I mean, it's charming in its own weird, bizarro way. But it's not much of a game. You know, it's really short, and there's not that much variety in it. There's only, like, two or three kinds of enemies in the entire game. And it's just, it's over really quickly, and you feel like it's a really kind of a thin experience, you know. And I think I remember the music better than anything else. Mario Land 2 feels like a real Mario game. And it also feels like a real game. Like, it has some meat to it. It has some real challenge to it. It has a ton of variety. And it has a lot of secret stuff, too, that's really fun. I mean, it has entire levels that are secret that just have alternate exits. I mean, a lot of this stuff is similar to Super Mario World, but done in a slightly different way. And I think it's better for it. And it just feels like a so much more sophisticated game.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the real thing in terms of, you know, you could look at it in a technical way or in a creative way. What's really surprising is not so much it's on the same system, but it's on the same system so soon after. It's only like 2 years later or something. I mean, obviously the Game Boy had such a long life. There was stuff towards the end that was completely way beyond like the early games. But this kind of seems like that, even though it's 2 years later, because it totally changes to the sort of, you know, what a lot of Game Boy games got like, which is the kind of big chunky sprite style that we kind of mentioned with Gargoyle's Quest and Metroid 2 to some extent. I mean, it's not that restrictive. But obviously, by necessity, it's somewhat slower paced because of that, you know, because you're bigger relative to everything else.
But that works with Mario, because Mario's the whole franchise is kind of a slow-paced 2D platformer.
Well, it especially works when you go to the world style. which this has, you know, is whereas the original Super Mario Land was Gunpei Yokoi's team's attempt to sort of ape, you know, what Miyamoto's team did with the original Super Mario Brothers, now they're trying to ape what Miyamoto did with Super Mario World. So you've got the flying cap with the bunny ears, you've got alternate exits, you've got all the stuff that's more about exploring and finding secrets, and so it's fine at a slower pace. It works quite well. I mean, I my experience with it was pretty much the same as yours, except I played it a bit more. I think it was another one of those games that it was like end of school, toy day, someone's got a Game Boy, all right, let me see if I can beat this entire game. And I got close, but I didn't quite do it, so it was nice to kind of to actually finish it. I mean, it's pretty bloody easy, but it's much more varied, as you said, than Super Mario Land, so it's still a lot more satisfying for it.
I actually think there are a few stretches that are legitimately challenging.
The last level is quite hard, but I really didn't think anything before that was much to write home about in terms of difficulty.
There's just a few things. I think if you just want to blow through the level, you can usually do that. But if you want to find some of the secret stuff, some of it can be a little bit challenging, and some of it's just hidden really well. And you have to do some pretty clever stuff to get through it.
I think there's like 32 levels. It's, you know, that's the maximum number, you know, when you save file. When you look at it, 32 is like this game's 96, essentially.
I didn't even know there was a save file. How do you save your game?
Well, it just saves automatically, but if you... Because what happens after I finished it, I went to the menu to reset it to see... Then, having finished the game, how many levels I'd got out of the total. And then, once you reset it, you go to your save file and it says, like Super Mario World, how many exits or levels, however they look at it, you've actually cleared. And I think I had about 25, and I've since found another few. I'm up to like 28. I think, like I said, it's about 32 in total. So, it definitely, Super Mario Land got like 12 levels.
Yeah, and two of them are shooters, I think.
So. Yeah, and they're not nearly as varied as this. So this is definitely much more like, you know, a proper Mario game in terms of scope and variety and all that kind of stuff. So it's very enjoyable. I mean, yes, it's still kind of short and easy, but for $4 or £3.60, it's very, very worthwhile, I feel.
I would say that it's, for me, one of its biggest differences is that it has, like, worthwhile and challenging boss battles. Like,
the bosses are pretty good, actually. I mean, I don't know how challenging they are necessarily, but more so than, like, the usual bop three times. Like, I mean, there's still quite a lot of bopping three times. Don't let me mislead anyone.
No, but there's some level of pattern memorization, more so than usual, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Sophisticated bosses might be a better word for it.
Yeah, they've got some wrinkles in there that just make them a bit more... Some of them are just weird, like the three pigs thing and all that. You know, like, they're not things that... Again, it's kind of showing a little bit, even though it's not quite as sort of weirdly inauthentic as the original Super Mario Land, that this is not really the Mario guys making a Mario game. There's some weird stuff in there. But
they do a really good imitation this time.
I can't wait for Wario Land, which has already been rated... So it's coming pretty soon, probably. But I think that was Australia that's already rated it. But, I mean, all the same, it's probably going to be a few months, maybe at the beginning of next year at the latest or something. And that is where Gunpei Yokoi's team already want they started to go more in their own direction, obviously. But I've always heard great things about the Wario Land games, the early ones.
Yeah, well, I am a big fan of Wario Land 2 and 3 because I played both of those on my Game Boy Color, in color.
Right.
But the original, Super Mario Land 3, Wario Land, was kind of a mid-range Game Boy game. I was a teenager by that point. My friends weren't playing Game Boy as much anymore, and I still didn't have my own. So I think I might have played that game for like 2 or 3 minutes once ever on a friend's system. And so I really am not familiar with it at all. And based on the progression from Mario Land 1 to 2, I'm very excited to see where they go with 3. And because I already love Wario Land 2 and 3 and Shake It so very much, I'm really excited to see kind of where the series started, you know, and get to play with all of Wario's weird powers. So I'm thrilled about that. Yeah, I can't wait. But don't overlook Mario Land 2 because it's very, very, very good. I'm really happy with it. Much more than I was with the first one. Like, the first game, I bought it because it was the first thing on eShop, and I wanted to have it. I wanted to hear the music, but it's not a great game.
It's fun, but it's just super insubstantial.
Yeah, I didn't feel bad after I played it, you know? I didn't feel bad that I'd paid for it, but I didn't feel great about it either. You know, I was like, okay, let's chalk this one up. Sort of not a win, not a loss, just kind of in between. The Mario Land 2 is a great value, and it's an excellent game. So the other thing I wanted to bring up this week is Rochard. And it's spelled with a C. It could be Rochard, but I think it's Rochard. And it's a PSN game. It's a download exclusive title on PlayStation. And it's a really interesting little game, and I think some of you guys might really like it. I know Greg would like it, and I think John would like it too, actually. And James would like it, but he can't play it. But it's a really cool game. It's a 2D platformer and puzzle game, sort of combined. So it's puzzle platformer, 2D, even though it's on PS3, and it looks really good. It has great graphics, and it's kind of an indie game that Sony picked up, and I think Sony published it.
I think so.
You know, there's a lot of games on PSN that have a very indie kind of a feel to them, but they're, you know, they're like legitimate releases. And the game's, it's only $10, which was also attractive, and I played the demo for it and loved the demo. I was like, okay, if there's more of this, it was one of those moments where I got to the end of the demo and I said, if this is $10, I'm going to buy it. If it's $15, I'm going to have to go and read a bunch of reviews and think about it more. And I went to the store and it was $10. And I said, okay, I'm getting it. And I've only played a little past the demo at this point. I haven't had a whole lot of time to put into it. But the basic premise of the game is that it's kind of a physics-based platformer. So it reminds me a bit of Trine. I don't know if you guys ever played Trine. It's a really cool game. And the sequel's coming out fairly soon, I think. But basically, you play this character. He's kind of this rotund, hillbilly sounding, not hillbilly, but definitely has a pronounced southern accent, and he's a sort of a space miner. You know, like he works on an asteroid rig, but he has like a construction worker kind of feel to him, you know, and he has this gun that's basically the gravity gun from Half-Life. Like you point it at stuff and it picks it up, and then you can move it around and you can launch it sort of in an arc to move stuff around. So that's one of the main mechanics. You use that to solve a lot of puzzles. But then the other main mechanic is you pick up, wasn't real clear on how this works, but you pick up the ability to reduce gravity. And I guess the idea is that he uses this to help him do construction work on the asteroid. You know, it helps him move things around. It helps him get around more easily. So you pick up this ability and you hold down a shoulder button and the screen goes a little bit blue. And now you can jump about twice as high. But it's a very floaty kind of a jump. You know, it's like very slow and you can control yourself all the way up and all the way down. It also lets you pick up much larger objects with your grapple gun because now they weigh less. It lets you fall slower so you can fall from a taller height without hurting yourself. And it changes the way that things sort of move once they're airborne. So you can sort of launch a box with your gravity gun and then reduce gravity and it'll kind of change the way that it flies through the air. So these are both really cool mechanics, and then when you combine them, it lets you do a lot of stuff. And then there's elevators, and there's robots that shoot at you, and there's dudes, and you do pick up a gun as well. It's like a little laser gun, and it feels pretty good to use. It actually, the combat reminds me a bit of Shadow Complex, although it's simpler than that. But you know, it's like the twin joysticks thing. So you move your character with one joystick, and then when you want to shoot, use the right joystick to sort of aim your gun, and then you push your shoulder button to shoot it. So you can aim in 360 degrees around your character, even though it's a 2D platformer.
Cool.
The combat seems pretty easy for the most part, but I think it's set up so that you could actually beat the game without actually using a gun. Because you can also pick up boxes with your gravity gun and just shoot them into enemies and smash their heads that way. Or you can make things fall from above them. And there's little explosive things you can toss around. So there's a lot of options. There's ways to get rid of enemies without shooting them with your gun. There's probably a trophy for doing that. But yeah, it looks great, and it's really fun mechanics. So I'm looking forward to playing more of Rochard. And I would recommend you guys check out the demo if you get a chance. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
All right, Greg, you're going to wrap it up for us.
Yep. One thing I want to mention here, not really anything to do with what I've been playing, but just while I think of it, funnily enough, just shortly after our last episode went out, there was a new promotional video or something for Ni No Kuni for PS3, wherein it confirmed that there will not be a physical book with the game, as we said last week. But it will have some sort of digital version of the book in the game.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, which we must assume you would access through a pause menu or whatever. But if that doesn't make it even more likely that you could have a nicer way of doing the same thing on Wii U, then I'd be surprised.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Actually, while we're on the topic, I just thought of this, but you could do a really cool Okami game on Wii U. Put the screen down on the Wii U tablet and draw on it.
I'm up for more Okami. I enjoyed the DS one. It'd be nice if there were another game that it would step beyond the confines of the original a bit more.
Yes.
But it was still good. But obviously a lot of what I played was Super Mario Land 2 and Four Swords, which we already discussed. So what I have left is the end of Aliens Infestation. I've beaten it now. Lengthwise, it's pretty comparable to a portable Metroid. 5 hours-ish, maybe, first time through kind of thing. Although you're probably less apt to get stuck on something. You know, in a Metroid game, you might be lost for what to do for a while. That's not going to happen in Aliens Infestation. It's a bit more straightforward. But in terms of some of the things that we talked about last week, the progression, as is your abilities and all that, it didn't really kind of ramp up in some crazy unexpected way or anything like that. You know, you still got a few more keys or a few more items that are a bit like keys and powered up some of your guns, you know, with some of the items that are hidden in vents and things. So it didn't throw up any surprises in that way or any pleasant surprises or anything. The thing that surprised me the most about the game in a bad way as it went on was that really the action didn't evolve in a way that I hoped that it would. You know, it didn't get to the level that I kind of expect with Way Forward, in particular with their boss design. You've got some big bosses, you know, some big encounters with some crazy sort of xenomorph monsters of various sorts, and they're okay. And they look pretty cool, and the animation, I mean, like on everything else, but particularly on the bosses, is very cool and stuff. But in terms of their patterns, the difficulty, or the thought behind them, they don't really stack up with some of the other bosses that they've made for stuff like Contra 4. It didn't quite hit that level for me. And that is a problem, because you've got this kind of Metroidvania-style game. You're kind of thinking, well, it's not going to be as intricate because, you know, the empowerment, the abilities you get aren't going to be as radical in how they change the way you play the game. And they weren't. So you're kind of looking to make up a bit of a deficit there with some more advanced or kind of balls-to-the-wall boss encounters. And that didn't really happen.
Yeah, I mean, I thought even in Contra 4, I thought that there was, I mean, every once in a while you come across a boss where you're just like, well, that's it.
Yeah, the thing about that is on the harder difficulties, they have more attack patterns.
Yeah.
So if you haven't played it on the full whack, you won't appreciate everything they can do. And I was definitely, they were not up to that standard in Aliens Infestation. They were not up to the standard of sort of the normal difficulty bosses in Contra 4. I would not say so. Now, the way it functions best, which you know, maintained all the way through, was as an Aliens game. I mean, it's just pretty much perfectly observed as an Aliens game. So if that's a big deal to you, if you like, you know, Alien and Aliens or Aliens, I'm kind of one of these people that is not that keen on the second one. It's very, very different from the first one. I mean, I liked it as a kid.
My favorite's Resurrection. Obviously, I'm kidding.
But anyway, the point is, for me, I have enough love of the franchise that the references mean something to me, and so I got a certain amount of enjoyment out of that. But not, it didn't quite crack the. If I was going to kind of put it somewhere on a totem pole, you know, compared to a lot of the reviews that have sort of circulated around so far for the European outlets, I would probably say I like it somewhat less, just a bit less. I don't know, when you've played, some of it is if you've played as many of this kind of game as I've played, as many times as I've played them, the standard is quite high, and while this is solid, it just doesn't have something to push it over the top.
Fair enough. I mean, I felt a bit about Monster Tail sort of the same way. It's good, but it's very formulaic, and it doesn't, what it adds to that formula is not really what that formula needed.
So, I mean, it's just, this is crying out for more that harder edge in the action. You know, that is this game's comparative advantage over something like Metroid, you know, given that it's source material and given its developers.
Yeah.
That's what you're expecting. And I don't know whether it's related to the game's curious development cycle at all, or they just, you know, didn't quite have it this time. But it just underwhelmed somewhat in that area.
All right. Well, good to know. That game will be out not too long after you listen to this show, so you sort of check it out and make up your own mind. Let us know what you think. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got our Holiday 2011 preview. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We have impressions of Super Mario 3D Land from Aaron Kaluska, which point he gets to go through all of the first three worlds of the game. We also have impressions of Skylander Spyro's Adventures by J.P. Corbin. Because apparently Activision decided the Spyro brand needs to be revived, but, quote, this kid-focused game is worth a look from gamers of all ages. John?
Over to you, John.
Our own Zach Miller reviews the DSiWare title, The Legend of Zelda Four Swords Anniversary Edition. He says, quote unquote, I can taste the rainbow, and it tastes good.
It's a triple rainbow!
Find out what that means.
I don't want to know what that means.
And also on the review front, we have a 3DS review of 3D Classics Twinbee by James Dawson. He says it's another vertical shooter that becomes a 3D classic, but this might be the best in the series so far.
Moving on to previews, we have Gabriel's Ghostly Groove for the 3DS by Andrew Brown, with which Gabrielle sneezed her soul out. What's a ghost girl to do? Dance, of course. It is a rhythm game after all. Next up, we have an interview by Jared Rosenberg with the developers of the WiiWare game Horizon Riders. So we chat with Sabarasa about their upcoming hoverboarding WiiWare title, including balance board support.
And it does look a little bit like Sin and Punishment, I gotta say. The demo's out now, haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, so the Under the Radar story, we got a game and its demo in the same week.
But still no Virtual Console. It's the longest stretch ever. Longest drought ever for Virtual Console on Wii. Finally, we've got a brand new feature by our old friend Carl Castaneda. What? I can't believe Carl wrote something for the site. It's called Staff Says.
That's that. Well, he got everyone else to write it for him. That's
right. Carl didn't write anything.
Yeah, it's a brand new feature in which the staff of NWR gives you their quick and dirty opinions on their memories of the N64. And I do mean quick, and in many cases, I do mean dirty.
Oh, yeah.
So be sure to check out that new feature and all the other content we just told you about. It's all over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show. It's time to discuss our Holiday 2011 preview. So we've basically all picked out a couple of games to highlight on Nintendo platforms, Wii, DS, and 3DS, and we're going to talk about them. We're going to kind of go around and bring up a game that we want to highlight, and we'll go around a couple of times like that, and then at the end we might have some honorable mentions and some multi-platform titles or some non-Nintendo games that we want to bring up too that we're excited about.
And every time it sounds forced, take a shot.
Yeah, and of course this is meant to be informative to our listeners, maybe let you know about some things that are coming out that you might not have put much attention to yet, or maybe not have heard of very much. And also get your mind churning, and if we miss something, if there's something coming out that you think is worth our attention and we miss it, let us know, and maybe we'll seek it out. So before we get started, I thought it'd be good to have a brief group discussion of just kind of the state of the holiday lineup this year. Let me just get this out of the way. It's not great. It's not super broad.
Well, I mean, you've got the big three, as I've referred to before, which is you've got Zelda, you've got Mario 3D Land, and you've got Mario Kart 7. I mean, that's three real, real biggies.
Right.
And in Europe, they are insanely close together. 3D Land comes out on the same day as Skyward Sword.
It's like they've got a death wish.
On the 18th of November, and then I think 2 weeks later is Mario Kart 7. So, I mean, those few weeks are just going to be pretty crazy. It's quite a lot of money to drop, especially as I'm intending to get the limited edition bundle of Zelda, because I haven't got a Wii Remote Plus yet. I'd quite like the gold one.
Hmm. It's like they said, okay, we could spread this out, but yeah.
And you've also got in Europe, I think you've got Kirby for Wii and Layton very close to that period as well.
You do, I believe, yes.
It's going to be super dense there. It's better spaced in America.
Yeah.
But still, it's going to get a little bit crazy once you get to that Thanksgiving period.
Well, I think there's a couple of interesting things. First off, I think, and this includes Kirby, which is already out in North America, but it's not in Europe yet.
No, I'm talking about Kirby Wii there.
Yeah, he's talking about Kirby Returns to only first player can open the door.
I think there's a couple interesting trends this holiday season. I mean, first off, the Wii is pretty thin. That's not a big surprise. We kind of all knew that. If it weren't for Zelda, this would be really bad for Wii. I mean, really, really bad.
The Wii would be a non-entity, essentially.
But we do have Zelda, and because of that, and Xenoblade 2 for some of us, I'm probably going to be playing my Wii more this holiday season than I did last.
Well, that's a low bar.
Well, you know, I mean, last year I had Kirby and Donkey Kong and what else?
GoldenEye.
Yeah.
GoldenEye. Yeah, that was good. But I think I'll actually be playing it more this year. I mean, you know, Zelda's a big game. It's not only an exciting game, but it's a long game. And I think because of that, I'm just going to be playing... It's nice. It's going to be nice to actually spend the holidays playing the Wii a little bit, which I haven't done. It feels like I haven't really done that as much the past couple years.
Well, it's been a while since the Wii has really had an event game.
Oh, and this is. Yeah. So that's good. I mean, it obviously, if it weren't for that, it would be an abysmal holiday season for the Wii. But it does have Zelda, and you really can't discount that. I mean, I doubt there are very many people listening to this who don't care about Zelda. Yeah. So I think, you know, in general, the collective Wii are very excited about Zelda, and I think that's saving the season for Wii. But the other big thing is we're finally reaching the point where there's sort of a critical mass of 3DS games. And, you know, I think 3DS sales were going to be good regardless because of the price drop, and it's the first holiday season for the platform, and Nintendo's going to market it well. It looks like they're figuring out how to market it better. And I think the 3DS was going to do well this holiday season anyway, but they're actually going to sell some software for it, which has obviously been a big problem for Nintendo so far. And those of us who've had the system for a while now, we're finally going to be gratified. You know, I mean, we're finally going to be satisfied, I think, with these games. And it's not a massive lineup, you know. It's not like a mature system. It's still a new system, but it's also post-launch. These aren't crappy, thin... Right. Lazy-looking launch titles. These are real games.
Yeah, linchpin titles, like more than one linchpin title.
Yeah, absolutely. And there may only be four or five of them, but I could end up buying four or five 3DS games this holiday season.
Really?
That's a big deal, yeah.
Well, they're super clustered. I mean, there's some of these we're going to talk about as we get into our personal picks, but at least in Europe, I'm not as familiar with the American schedule, but that middle of November... It goes beyond Nintendo. Sega's got quite a lot of stuff coming out, in particular with Sonic and with Shinobi. And then you've got Cave Story and stuff. I mean, there is a lot all at the same time. I'm not sure how much, you know, they're going to be able to sell some of these lesser games when you've got the Shadow of Mario. But for those of us who have a pent-up demand for 3DS software, it'll be a good time.
I do think it goes back to what we reported on a while ago, which was that publishers were holding titles waiting for the 3DS to pick up steam. I think ultimately that strategy is going to bite them in the ass because they could have had...
Yeah, have they held them too long now? Right. I mean, that's the problem.
Now they're sort of staring at the Colossus, then it's not a good place to be. I mean, if you launched 2 months ago, what are you competing with? A bunch of lazy DS ports.
But it's catch-22 for the point, but then is there anybody to buy it? You know, if you go but then does it get overlooked when there's more people to buy? It's difficult to find that sweet spot, but I don't know whether they're in it.
You know, I think they're going to be okay. I think the 3DS is a kind of system where you're going to pick it up, and you're going to pick it up with more than one game.
Yeah, but you pick it up with more than one game. Okay, you've bought Mario 3D Kart and Mario 3D Land.
Yeah.
You haven't bought Cave Story 3D.
Maybe, but I also think people are looking for variety and...
how are those games not variety? They're totally different genres.
To a parent, they look like they're both the same. And, you know, the other thing is, I do think January is really going to be the perfect time to release a 3DS game. And there are a few coming out. Not a ton, it doesn't look like, but a few. But I think that will be a really excellent time to release your game, because now you've got a bunch of people with a brand new system that they got over the holidays, and... You know, they've beaten Mario, they've played enough Mario Kart, they're looking for the next thing, and that's
going to be... Well, that is when Revelations will be coming out in Europe, is the very end of January.
Yes.
Yeah, it's February 2nd, I think, in America.
Yeah, it's within a week, but it's pretty much at the same time in both territories.
I think that game's going to sell well. I'll call it right now. I think that game's going to do all right, because Mercenaries did okay, and it did well in Japan. It did... kind of okay in America. Revelations will blow it out of the water. And actually, before we move on, John, you're the only one of us four who doesn't have a 3DS. What's your kind of current feeling on that matter?
My current feeling is there's still not quite, I mean, even after the end of this year with Mario and Mario Kart coming out, still not quite enough to make me pony up the money that I don't have to get a 3DS and the games that go along with it. My thought there is that Mario Kart, I'm more of a console Mario Kart guy in terms of, you know, just I'd like to really sit there, you know, on the couch with a couple of friends and, you know, play through it rather than on the handheld. I've never been a big handheld Mario Kart guy. I mean, ultimately, I think that's the kind of game that you want to play with friends of yours. So, you know, you can play random people online, but that gets boring after a while.
Yeah, it needs to be the people you like.
Yep.
But certainly before PAX East, right? Because
that's when you're going to get your 800,000 street passes.
Yeah, and we'll all be up there to play stuff locally with you, and you got to get one by then, right?
We'll see. We'll see.
Oh, it'll take us somebody's got to pick up at the airport or something, and then all this rational, oh, I don't have the money, and I don't know whether the games are good enough yet. It'll just play, oh, no, I'll buy it, yeah.
Yeah, keep in mind, this is the man that was talked into buying Pokemon Black and White pretty much on a whim.
You know, I have weakness just like anybody else.
Let's get into the games. James, why don't you start off?
So, there's a new Layton on DS. Hey. I haven't played it yet, and it's a Layton game. Therefore, I'm excited. I mean, just to be honest about it, that's pretty much the mental calculus that has to take place. Is it Layton? Yes.
Do you know anything about the story?
It's going to be completely asinine. I mean, besides that, not
it's,
really.
It's set in the past. It's when Luke's smaller.
Yeah.
And also, the big thing is for the American audience, not the European audience, it's got the London Life RPG mode.
Which basically means if you live in Europe, you should probably just import it.
You could do that.
Yeah, you probably should.
Because it's not a DSi game, so it will play.
But then you'll get the weird American voices for Luke.
I've already done that twice, actually. They are... the more normal voices to me in terms of how often I've heard them, not in terms of what they actually sound like.
I've heard the other Luke voice. It's not that much better. I mean,
no, it's slightly better.
It's significant. It's not massive, but it's significantly better.
Well, it's a bit less than shooting yourself in the foot. It's like shooting yourself in the big toe.
Actually, I wonder if I guess we could find this out, but I don't know if the younger version of Luke in this prequel game is going to have a different voice.
Well, presumably they just told the voice actor, just make it a little bit higher this time.
Oh, boy.
Professor! Somewhere in that range. It's like, oh, God, no. Maybe he hasn't learned to talk yet. Maybe we'll be lucky and just be like, just a toddler wandering around. The professor's like, I like the look of this kid's diaper. He's going to be a great detective.
It's tough for me, Layton, because I think my appetite for Layton is kind of every other game that comes out, but I am really curious about London Life. So I'll be very curious to hear your impressions of it, James, and whether you think it's kind of a tipping point in terms of value.
It's hard for me to judge because I don't need a tipping point on that game.
I understand, but I'll be able to judge based on your description.
I'm so in the bank for that series at this point. It's dangerous. It's like... Oh, you released a Layton game that you telling us isn't good? Layton and the We're Not Really Trying Anymore. Right, well, okay, I'll take it, but I'm not happy about it.
Okay, so John, you're up next.
Yeah, one that I think is completely being overlooked, but based on the quality of the last game in the series, I think could be actually be quite good, is Modern Warfare 3, because it's being done by Treyarch again, who did Black Ops for Wii, which was really, really good. I had a chance to play that. Actually, I have it. I own it.
That was your chance to play it. I bought it.
Yeah. And yeah, it was actually really, really good. I was really, really impressed by it.
Did you play it online much on Wii?
Yeah, I did play it online quite a bit. It was very, very good. It has all kinds of different game modes. I mean, you know, you can see when
were there a lot of people online?
Yeah. I mean, you can see when your friends come online. The only problem I had was matchmaking was kind of wonky.
Well, that's a standard for a Nintendo matchmaking.
Exactly.
It's interesting because the HD versions of Modern Warfare 3 are being made by Infinity Ward with some help from Saber. I think is what they're called.
So Finite Ward now, essentially.
Yeah, maybe that's a better term. So I guess Treyarch is only doing the Wii version this year. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did the Modern Warfare Reflex edition, didn't they? Originally, they just made all the Wii ones.
Yeah, Infinity Ward never made any Wii games at all.
No, never. So sometimes Treyarch is kind of porting their own games when it was off-year ones, and then sometimes they're porting Infinity Ward's work. Which is the case here. But I mean, I think they sell pretty well on Wii. I mean, obviously not anywhere near what they sell on the other systems, but in terms of how many people you might expect to be playing online and stuff, it's still a pretty respectable number, given that, you know, they seldom see like any platform specific promotion or anything. They still do okay.
I mean, it's a really big franchise, and you know, the thing is, they're quality games in terms of being first-person shooters on Wii. So I think it'll be good. I think definitely if you're a first-person shooter fan, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so the next game I want to talk about is Spider-Man Edge of Time. And I'll talk about the Wii and 3DS versions. We'll get to another version of it in a second. But the Wii and 3DS versions are essentially the same thing. We didn't really see the 3DS game at E3. I think they showed us a demo, but it wasn't really playable. But they told us it's basically just a port of the console game. So it's the full console experience on your 3DS in 3D, and that's the only difference. So these are essentially the exact same game. The Wii version doesn't really have motion control. I think you only use it in sort of quick time events, you know, like some kind of special cinema.
Shake it, quick!
You might have to shake it, but it's not really part of the gameplay. And there's no motion web swinging or anything like that. So this is by Beenox, which are the same studio who made last year's game Shattered Dimensions. And I wasn't a huge fan of Shattered Dimensions. I only rented it. I played some of it. I thought it was okay. A little bit too scattered, you know, with the four different types of Spider-Man.
It's Shattered, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. It was a little too fragmented. You know, it's like they were trying a lot of different things, but they couldn't really focus enough on any one thing. But I thought it looked really nice. I played it on Xbox last year, and I thought it looked nice. I thought, you know, it seemed to be a pretty quality production, which you can't always say for Activision Spider-Man games from some other developers. So I was fairly impressed with it overall, just didn't feel like finishing it. For this year's game, Edge of Time, it's the same studio. They're taking a similar approach, but instead of four different Spider-Mans and four different kinds of gameplay, they just cut it down to two. And it's the two that I really kind of would care about the most. It's The Amazing Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2099. So in this, the future Spider-Man, who I'm somewhat obsessed with, as you might have heard over on Crosstalk Comics, I did a whole episode about that character, about that comic series. I'm really, really into Spider-Man 2099. I think he's an awesome character. It was an awesome comic book series that was largely forgotten for about a decade. And then recently, primarily because of last year's video game, it's kind of come back a little bit. And I wasn't really satisfied with the representation of that comic in last year's video game, but I think this year they've had a lot more time to spend on that, a lot more time to think about how to use that character and how to incorporate it. And they changed the voice actor, which is, I know it seems like a really trivial thing, but the voice actor for that character in last year's game annoyed the piss out of me, and they fired him.
Didn't they replace it with someone who provided the voice for one of the other Spider-Men in that game?
Yes.
The Spider-Men's.
Which I'm fine with.
It's the guy that did the 90s animated series, I think.
Yeah. And judging from the E3 demo that we saw this year, I thought it just, the change totally worked, made a big improvement. Like I said, it was a short demo that we saw. I don't know that it's going to have a ton of depth, you know. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of cool exploration. I think it's still going to be really combat heavy. But I like the idea of narrowing their focus a little bit and telling a real story. I mean, last year's game was really not much. It was like the just the thinnest premise to get all these different Spider-Man universes into one game. This year's story sounds like it's a lot more integrated, and that it makes more sense. And the characters are actually kind of telepathically talking to each other across time and space. And potentially that could work really well if the writing's good. So I am looking forward to it. I don't think it's going to be like a game of the year material, but I think it could be really, really solid and a nice improvement over last year's, which most people really liked, actually.
But not Johnny.
All right, Greg, why don't you tell us about the DS version or what little we know of it?
Yeah, so this is a real wild card pick, but you know, I thought this was just bringing in something that we certainly haven't spoken about before, because there's been virtually no press material provided until very recently for the DS version of Spider-Man Edge of Time. But it is a bit different from the DS Spider-Man games that they've been before, that Johnny reviewed Web of Shadows a couple of years ago very highly. I played that one. I enjoyed it. They are the Metroidvania Spider-Man games. And this, we're not exactly sure where it kind of fits in, because it's a different developer now. It's being developed not by Griptonite, who we'll get to later, but it's being developed by Other Ocean, who are the people that made Dark Void Zero for DSiWare. And so,
oh boy, right. That's sexy.
Yeah, so what you've got now is they just released some screenshots a few days before the game came out in the US. It will be out, it is out now in the US as people hear this, and it's going to be coming out shortly in Europe. But it's a pixel art style, looks nice. I mean, that's the one thing I didn't really like about Web of Shadows. I mean, they had the polygonal graphics and the mechanics and the physics and all that. It all felt nice, but aesthetically, it just wasn't very Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's not a very pretty game, Web of Shadows.
No.
And Shattered Dimensions last year was also Griptonite. It's a really good game too, but it also doesn't look all that great.
Yeah, so I mean, here you've got this nice pixel art, but also you're very comic book looking aesthetic just from the few screenshots that I have seen. So that's kind of cool. And you know, given the pedigree of what Other Ocean did with Dark Void Zero, and obviously there's some similar kind of mechanics in play. So obviously Spider-Man has aerial mobility, not the same as a jetpack, but you know, you think it's the kind
the
of
spider pack.
It's the kind of thing, you know, that they could do a good job with on that basis. And apparently, it's got some sort of characters that show up that aren't in the console games or whatever, like I think Rhino and Shocker, some classic villains, stuff like that. So that's about all we know about the game. It's, you know, there's not a lot to go on.
Yeah, but it sounds like it merits further research.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be a certain amount of reviews, probably not that many, actually, because DS is getting sort of very much phased out of emphasis, especially when you've got a multi-platform game like this and you've got a DS SKU. It's tough for it to get coverage on a lot of sites.
Yeah, and we're still somewhat at the whims of the publisher, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know how many copies are even sending out, what kind of priority they're putting on that.
Or how many copies are even putting on the market, I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, because they may be looking at it, at selling it to a crowd that's not exactly review sensitive, shall we say, at this
right.
point. So, again, how good it's going to be, I don't know. But it's interesting to me. I really like the idea of playing a Spider-Man game that's got a cool Spider-Man look to it. That's, you know, it's one of the games, one of the sort of series where that's actually quite a lot more important to me than it is in just your average game. And in terms of the structure, it's obviously a side scroller, it's some sort of action platform, but whether it's got non-linear elements or all that kind of thing, not sure. It's got the same kind of flitting between time periods gimmick or, you know, hook that the other versions have of some kind, but again, we're not sure how it's all implemented.
Cool. I'm glad you brought it up. I did not know anything about it before this, and I'm going to have to look into it. All right, James, what else you got, man?
So, obviously, we've talked about this quite a bit. Super Mario 3D Land, unfortunate placement of the 3D aside. I had a lot of fun with this game at E3, even though I mostly played it outside in the sun, where it was about the least conducive place to play it. But, I mean, it's a Mario platformer from the Galaxy team, and it's on 3DS, which is in dire need of something.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, you know, EAD Tokyo haven't steered me wrong yet. Their relatively brief lifespan as a developer. Certainly that in itself is cause for excitement. But there's some new things that we've discovered recently that are interesting.
Yes.
You know, for instance, there is going to be some sort of limited Street Pass capability to do with items swapping back and forth, which, because initially they'd indicated they wouldn't have any Street Pass in it, because they were like, well, what would it be for? and then they put this in, so it's probably not too much.
Well, they got a little beaten up in the press for that one. It's like, how can you discuss how great Street Pass is if you can't think of ideas for it?
It's like, wait, you're supposed to be telling us what it's for.
Hey, guys, do you have any ideas how we can use this?
So they've put something in there. It's probably a bit perfunctory, but some of the other things, one of the most interesting things is it's very clear now that you have got explicitly labeled sections that sort of leverage the stereoscopic display, in that, you know, some of these bonus rooms where there might be a coin medal or, you know, one of those special medals like you have in New Super Mario Brothers or the Comet Medal to Galaxy 2, but it's like, say, like an isometric room where, you know, basically it's got kind of an optical illusion sort of thing, which you definitely would have trouble deciphering in 2D, but in 3D you would be able to see that trick through the depth and then get to the medal accordingly.
Yeah, that's in the trailer that's on the eShop, and that reminded me of Super Mario RPG. There's some stuff in that game where you kind of go behind the scenes to find secret little pathways and coins.
But the interesting thing is it actually has like a label on those bits where it's like a little 3D written in the corner to like tell you, like, if you've been playing with the 3D off, just, you know, because you wanted to conserve battery, you might want to turn it on now, kind of thing. So it's interesting how sort of compartmentalized that element of the game is going to be. Is it just going to be in these very specific parts where there's a very obvious kind of trick being done that leverages the stereoscopic display? Or will there be sort of broader but less severe kind of instances of it elsewhere in the game? I'd be quite interested to see. But the one thing that lately came out that I sort of tingled my spidey sense a little bit was Miyamoto was giving an interview in which he said, like, basically, oh, well, it's not too difficult, we've made it so it's not too difficult just to get up to, like, the last world, and then it gets difficult, which I interpreted as, yeah, the first seven worlds are going to be completely piss easy, aren't they? And this is backed up by Aaron's impressions that we referenced in Now Playing, that the first three worlds he played, like, he built up 75 lives in no time and hardly died and all this kind of stuff. So the key thing for me is going to be, what are the extra things in the game? What are the secret levels? What are the secret exits? All that kind of stuff. Yeah, what do these comet medals get you? Yeah, do they get you really cool secret levels that are tough and imaginative, like the special world in Super Mario World or something like that? Yeah, these are the questions that I think are going to go from, you know, is this going to be a solidly entertaining but sort of unremarkable Mario game to something that could be really special? So I'm kind of uncertain of that right now, but I'm still very excited for it.
I'm really on the fence with this one. I want to see more of it. I want to read reviews of the full game, because the demos haven't completely turned me off, but they haven't sold me either, which is odd. And, you know, we discussed this before, but I'm not opposed to this game, and there's a strong likelihood I will end up picking it up. But I'm in wait and see mode, which is normally not the case with Mario. But based on what I've seen before, I want to know more about it. I want to hear, like, really honest, thorough opinions of people that I trust before I run out for this one. And James, are you looking forward to the opportunity to play this one at your own pace?
Yeah, that'll be nice.
Yeah,
I remember with Galaxy 2, you were really rushed to get through that.
a weekend to beat the game. Not great.
That's brutal.
I will not do that this time, let's put it that way. I will be moving along at a pace that is of my own choosing.
Yeah, I mean, if I did have a 3DS, I'd pretty much be in the same boat.
John's forthcoming book with HarperCollins.
If I bought it.
Oh, that's the thing. I feel the same way. I would wait to see the reviews.
Right. I mean, it seems to be a little bit experimental, which I respect very much, but that could also mean that it doesn't turn out the way I would like. I'm sure it'll be a good game regardless, but it may not be quite what I want out of a Mario game.
I haven't heard anybody say, yep, this is an amazing game, it's a slam dunk, you have to have, if you know, you have to buy a 3DS for it.
I think part of the problem is that they've pretty much shown the very beginning of the game every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you just showed someone the first couple levels of Galaxy, they'd be like, yeah, this is cool.
Well, I mean, I think most Mario games, I mean, the first so many worlds don't tend to, you know, they tend to be much less creative than once you get to the midway point or the secret stuff. Right. Or, I mean, certainly you could say that about New Super Mario Brothers. You could say it about even sort of like Mario 3. I think it gets way crazier as it goes on.
Oh, definitely.
So, I mean, that part of it, I'm definitely hoping for, you know, that there will be more creativity that, you know, obviously, I'm not expecting it to be as completely uninhibited as Galaxy. I think
no.
They want to bring it a bit back, you know, literally sort of down to earth to make it comport more with the better-selling Mario games that exist out there. But at the same time, I have a hard time believing that EAD Tokyo are not going to kind of run wild at various times with the level design concepts and things like that. So, I mean, I've got confidence. I'm excited about it. And the thing is, in the end, I mean, in the one sense, there is we've articulated before, there's a concern that if you kind of shoot for something between Galaxy and New Super Mario Brothers, you kind of end up, you know, not really pleasing anyone as much as you might have done. But on the other hand, every time they've taken the 3D Mario series a bit closer to the 2D ones, I've liked it. When they did the void levels in Mario Sunshine, those are my favourite parts of the game. The stuff in the Galaxy games that's more towards the 2D, I love that stuff too.
Yeah, but you didn't play any of that stuff with a circle pad.
Yeah, well,
that's my big concern. I'm not sure that they can make it fit that control.
We'll see. We'll see.
As well as I want it to, but we'll see. Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious to see whether or not is it going to be the game that gets the scores in the 9 to 9.5 range, or is it going to be the game that gets the scores in the 8 to 8.5 range?
Yeah, I mean, the Galaxy games are just, it's kind of preposterous how well reviewed they are. In a way, I mean, they are that good. I would not, but it's amazing how universal the acclaim is for those. It may struggle to live up to that because pretty much nothing does, you know. But that's not going to mean it's not worth playing, to say the least. But there is something for me that you actually, you know, a 3D Mario game that's closer to the side scrolls is tremendously exciting, but it is tempered by some of the other concerns.
Yep.
Okay, one to keep an eye on, obviously. So John, how about you?
Yeah, speaking of obvious, another one on my list is a game that some of you may know called Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
Tell you about this game, John.
Actually, you know what? I haven't actually followed it that closely.
John is the only one who hasn't played it. This was something.
I have not played it, and I have purposely not. I haven't been sitting there watching every trailer.
He is the only person on this podcast who hasn't played this game. It's amazing.
I've pretty much kept myself in the dark on purpose.
Well, all right, John. I'll give you a basic. There's this guy who wears green, and he kills lots of monsters. He
uses Motion Plus. Yeah.
And eventually he wins. The end.
Presumably. Don't want to jump the gun there. I mean, right now, there has been a deluge of trailers and information and spoilers and all that. This is the point where I've kind of shut it down.
Right. It's too much for me now. Like, there was a time when I was like, this was in similar territories like as 3D Land. It's like, I will probably like it, but I'd like to know more. You know, there's too many unanswered questions, and, you know, I'm concerned about how long this game's been in development. 5 years. 5 years since the last console Zelda.
Yeah.
So, it has really, really big expectations to fulfill. And for a while, I was a little bit concerned that it might not live up to that because they've been so quiet on it for so long. And now that they're really pulling back the curtain, I'm like, okay, that's enough.
They've pretty much literally blown the door off with respect to the amount of coverage they're providing this game now. I mean, basically, we get a press release about this game every third day.
And I'll tell you part of the reason why, James. This game needs to be a massive success for Nintendo because it's all they've got. I mean, they've got these 3DS games, and they're going to do well. But given the install base of 3DS, even if it has a really good Christmas, they're not going to sell millions and millions and millions of copies of Mario Kart 7.
No, I understand.
They will eventually, but not this holiday season.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything massive on DS. So.
It's just crossed into the realm of being absurd at this point, though. It's like, hey, guys, look at this. Screenshots.
I know. But they're buying insurance on this game's success. But this game has to be huge. They have to make people pull their Wiis out of the closet and hook them back up to the TV because they've got to sell like gangbusters on Zelda, or they're screwed. Again, this game's been in development for 5 years, so it's a very... I think they've said it's the biggest game they've ever made, maybe the most expensive game they've ever made.
Probably. I mean, I can't imagine what would have topped it if it's the biggest game they've ever
made. I also think part of it, with everything that's happened this year, I think that Nintendo really does not want to lose face. They really... I mean, they have to kind of show that they're still on top of the world when it comes to the best gaming experiences, right? Like, you know, they've taken a couple shots this year, so this is sort of their chance to say, hey, you know, like, we're still Nintendo. We still make these kinds of games, and they still sell millions and millions and millions of copies, so don't forget that.
But the Zelda games aren't their biggest sellers, though. So
not their biggest sellers, but still, I mean, it's, you know,
yeah, I mean, they sell well, but they're not like blow the doors off.
No, they're not new Super Mario Brothers Wii, and we wouldn't expect it to sell that way. So, you know, by definition, it's never going to be as profitable.
Still iconic, though.
Yeah, it's still got to sell well, and clearly, if they're going to meet their revenue projections and all that kind of stuff, you know, where they've got one big game for your system, which, as Johnny says, is still sort of going, but it also has a massive install base, they must have some pretty significant projections there that they're going to have to live up to. So, yeah, they've got to invest in it. They've got to shout loud and remind people of it because, you know, we've talked about it being busy for 3DS and all that, but, of course, it's busy for all the other platforms. It's a lot of noise that they've got to puncture through for a platform that's been very quiet the rest of the year.
I think they have a certain challenge in dealing with the less specific gaming media as well they probably have to deal with.
I think it's, you know, I think there are a lot of marketing challenges that Nintendo has with this game. In terms of, in the mainstream, they have to show why it's different than other Zelda games, but also it's not scary, you know, like it's a game that you can actually get into.
Yeah.
For their more loyal market, they have to show, hey, this is better than Twilight Princess, it's better than Spirit Tracks. I mean, I'm a little sour on Zelda from Spirit Tracks, I didn't like it that much. I didn't like it nearly as much as I wanted to, you know. And Phantom Hourglass, I wasn't super keen on it either. I mean, those are the last two Zelda games that they've made. So that's fresh on my mind. And I really want this one to just clean the palette and just knock it out of the park and be like, yes, this is why I love Zelda. This is why I love Nintendo. This is what I wanted on my Wii for the past 5 years. Thank you, finally. Oh my God. I can now move on to the next system and I'm at peace with the Wii. And I know those are really, really big shoes to fill. That's a really tall order. But this game looks like it might actually be able to do it. I mean, they've really put all the chips on the table with this one. And it's a very high risk, but it's a very high possible reward. And I'm expecting big things out of it.
So who else is getting the full fat edition?
I might, because I don't have a Wii Motion. I don't have the Remote Plus.
I've got a black one. I barely talked about this on the show, but I picked up a Remote Plus with Fling Smash.
Yeah, you did mention it.
Back early in the year, because I got it for like 30. I think I got it for less than the remote itself.
You got it for less than the cost of the Remote Plus, yes, because Fling Smash is that bad.
Yeah, Fling Smash is worth negative dollars, basically. So
it pretty much is.
It's okay. It was better than free.
I think I got the Wii Sports Resort pack that had two of them in there.
Oh, okay.
But I'm still gonna get it just because.
Yeah, I want the built-in remote one because, you know, if it wasn't that the Wii U was going to continue to use Wii remotes, I wouldn't bother. But
yeah, it's still going to be useful.
Yeah, so I'm like, well, I hate the dongle. I mean, I absolutely positively hate the Wii Motion Plus dongle.
Oh, it sucks. Yeah.
So I might as well get it because I'll never use those Wii remotes again. I will effectively be retiring at least one of my Wii remotes when I get it.
I gave one of mine to my parents when I got them a Wii.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, by the way, my dad picked up Tiger Woods, the Masters, like this year's Tiger Woods game, and he loves it. He bought it for himself.
It's really good.
He didn't even ask me. He's like, hey, I bought some more golf for my Wii because he was playing Wii Sports Resort golf like crazy. And so he just went to the store and bridged himself up to Tiger Woods.
There you go.
And
you
I was like, wow, Dad, you bought a really good game. I've heard excellent things about that game. Do you like it? He's like, yeah, I really like it. So I can't wait to play it with him.
You just made Iwata's day.
I think that's where the Masters branding helps as well, though. That's why it was such a big get for EA, finally. But I mean, for me, I want the built-in remote that is going to have a usefulness going forward. And over here, you know, basically you're getting it for like 12 quid extra.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a pretty good value. It's going to be tremendously exciting. Like I said, I think it's weird to say 3D Land. That's exciting and all that. But just think about how many big Mario games have been since Twilight Princess. Like it's kind of scary. Like, you know, like New Super Mario Brothers Wii and the two Galaxy games. Like it's an eternity in the life of Mario that between Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword.
I mean, I'm much more high on the DS Zelda games because I think they were, especially the first one, was greatly inventive.
Yeah, I know people love them. They're not for me. I mean, I played them.
So for me, it's not been that long since the last great Zelda game. But to me, really, beyond the DS games, the last great Zelda game goes all the way back to Wind Waker. So I'm kind of happy to get that sort of aesthetic that I like more in this game. Hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things in this game that make me happy. And part of it is just I feel like it's got more of a theme that I want for my games.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely looks like it's shaking things up a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it just about as much as you could hope for in a Zelda game. It seems like they're going that crazy with it. The one thing, and I'm
Link
just
shoots
that,
a guy. Just walks down the street, just shoots
I'm
him.
Throwing this out there right now so I don't have to talk about it later, but I'm very disappointed that there's no voice acting. I really am. I think that as much money as they've put into producing this game and the standards of the modern era, I think it's very weird to put out a massive release like this with a huge story, and it's a tentpole game, and it doesn't have voice acting.
Yeah, you're going to be sitting there clicking through text dialogue, like...
Yeah.
Well, like, well, okay, fine, Link doesn't talk, whatever, that's fine, but all the other characters should talk, and I just think I'm okay with it. I'm not that superficial, but I think that it makes the game look kind of cheap, and I don't think this is a cheap game. No. I just think it kind of does an injustice to the production values that they are putting into this game.
I would, like I said, I would rather not do it than do it poorly.
Yeah, but I don't want them to do it poorly. I want them to do it well, and they can. And they're, you know, they're putting a lot of money into this game. So if they did it, I feel like they would do it well.
The other thing, I think the bigger issue, though, actually, it's not just like, all right, let's hire the right people that could do a credible job of doing voice acting, but you've also got to write differently.
Yes.
So something, that's really, you know, something that's in text, if it's spoken aloud, could take on a different quality. It could be a lot more kind of grating. It's a lot more unnatural when you're actually hearing someone say it. So you've really got to take a different approach from the people writing it in Japan to the people localizing it in a way. And, you know, especially because this game's development does probably go back a ways.
Well, and that's why a lot of...
I mean, evidently, it's too much to ask at this point. But yeah, I mean, at some point, they've got to start thinking, you know, all the way back to the script writing stage. Okay, let's write this for spoken dialogue.
And that's why a lot of animated productions have a script writer at all the recording sessions. I mean, they sit there and they'll stop and go, that sounds really bad. I'm going to go rewrite that scene. You guys go ahead and plow into the next section.
All right. Well, the next game that I'll bring up is Mario Kart 7. And it's more Mario Kart. And in that sense, maybe, you know, we don't have to say that much about it. It will be... Well, it's not going to sell better than Zelda because it has a lower install base. But
I think it'll have an insane attach rate, though.
Yeah. And it's going to sell better than Mario Land. I can tell you that right now. It will
3D
be
Land.
Nintendo's second best-selling game this season after Zelda, and it will be probably one of the top-selling games of next year.
Yes.
And I have complete faith that this game will be fucking awesome, and it is exactly what I wish I was playing on my 3DS right now. RPGs and stuff, I'm looking forward to. I want that kind of big, long, deep experience on my 3DS eventually, but right now what I need more than anything is some damn Mario Kart. I need a satisfying action game that I can pick up and play every single day and that I want to keep coming back to over and over and over again, and that I can play with other people online because it's 2011.
Yeah.
And also, Street Pass. I want a reason to carry around my 3DS and actually care about Street Pass again, and I think this game will be able to do it.
Oh, I think so. I mean, if you look at the sort of things they did, you know, on Wii even, like you could send ghost challenges back and forth, like, okay, you know, I'm challenging you on this track, here's my ghost with my best time, and then you kind of try and beat it and send another one back, or you could do that by Street Pass as well now, a lot more easily, presumably, just sort of casually. So it might just draw people in less deliberately into the whole time trial element of the game and all that. And I'm sure there's other aspects to the Street Pass and the online and all that. And I'm kind of encouraged by some of the new elements. I mean, yeah, they're modest, but I like the idea of having, you know, maybe a lot of different routes around tracks based on what you do when you're airborne or underwater.
Yeah, the hang gliding is going to be fantastic. That is a great addition.
You've seen clips in there where, you know, like if you manage to stay airborne for long enough, like you can find a bunch of speed boost pads on the outside of somewhere, which then takes you on a different kind of shortcut and that sort of thing. You know, I mean, it just sounds like the track design might be a bit less obvious and linear. You know, there's going to be a lot of different sort of wacky routes through these different areas. So the coins are going to come into that as well. Like, you know, how much do you want to go off out of your way to collect those to boost your top speed again? You know, going back to the original game, new power-ups. They just unveiled the Tanuki tail is going to be in this game, which you could use like defensively. You could use the tail to like swish away incoming shells. You've got the fire flowers in there. It's going to be quite a lot of new stuff relative to, you know, some other Mario Kart games by the look of it. Again, probably not like anything revolutionary, but along with the very, very tight controls that I experienced when I played it, and the graphics, which were really smooth and look nice in 3D.
And it's a good fit for 3D. Yeah, I thought the 3D looked really nice when I played at E3.
It seems like it's just going to be the total package.
Exactly.
If they get the battle mode right.
And put it online.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would like online battle mode, but for me, I think battle mode is more fun in person.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it is more screwing around, doing stupid things to each other and to yourself probably a lot of the time. You know, so I think that if they could really nail that, then that'll make the local multiplayer a lot more fun. And then hopefully they're going to deliver on everything with the online, which I think is a pretty good bet considering Mario Kart Wii, within the constraints of the Wii, did pretty much everything right. I mean, there's not a lot to complain about with the way it did online.
Yeah, and so, I mean, the only thing to complain about is that every other game after that didn't copy it. But, yeah, I think, you know, with the improved friend code system of Mario Kart 7, what this means is I've already put a lot of friend codes into my 3DS.
Yeah, it's all done.
And I don't have to do it again. So I buy this game, and on day one, I turn it on, and I can play online with my friends right away. That is an experience I'm not used to having on a Nintendo platform, and there really isn't anything on 3DS so far that's given me that opportunity, because I'm not in a Street Fighter. So this is my Street Fighter. You know, and I'm not the biggest fan of Mario Kart DS or Mario Kart Wii. I mean, I like both of those games, but they're not my favorite Mario Karts. But I think this one really could be. Also, I love the name. Screw you, James. I love it. Mario Kart 7.
It's terrible.
Do it.
Because it's terrible and you like bad things. That's why.
Yes, Mario Kart 7.
Because you have no taste.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm starved for 3DS, but
it's because you fail.
I'm so into Mario Kart 7.
Yeah, I'll be watching this very closely just to see kind of what the reviews are like and just seeing what people's general thoughts are. I'm expecting it to be excellent.
All right, Greg, wrap it up, please.
Well, yeah, first of all, I'm going to talk quickly about Shinobi for 3DS. I have discussed this before. This is developed by Griptonite, the aforementioned developer of the Spider-Man games for DS, like Web of Shadows and Shattered Dimensions. But this is not like a Metroid-type thing. You know, it's a successor to the classic Shinobi series, which I have not actually ever played any of those games, funnily enough. You know, I've always heard relatively good things about it, but never been moved to try it. But in this case, yeah, it is a platform action game. The graphics are, again, Griptonite have not been known for making aesthetically pleasing games. This one apparently is quite a bit better when you see it in person because it goes for a kind of stripped down, stylized kind of look, which I could certainly imagine would look better in person rather than in videos or certainly in screenshots.
Well, if you go back to their Spider-Man games on DS, they don't look great in stills, but the animation is really smooth, which is very, very important for Spider-Man. I think it's also very important for a ninja game like Shinobi. So, yeah, I played at E3 and I thought it looked certainly much better in motion than it does in screenshots, although it's still not, it's not like the best looking game on the system, but the animation's really important for this game.
Yeah, it's probably going to be more functional visually than sort of mind-blowing or anything. But gameplay-wise, you know, it's kind of got, obviously, an old-school edge because it's harkening back to the Shinobi games. But again, it's sort of similar to some other kind of games like Blood Rain with Way Forward I talked about a bit ago, you've got somewhat more of a combat element in there in the sense that you've got like this parry move where you can deflect things and you get like different sort of points associated with how you kill enemies and stuff. So there's a score element to the game which is supposed to provide a certain amount of replayability, which is something I could get behind if it's well implemented and actually sort of makes sense. You know, you could see how much better you could sort of play through a given level. That'd be interesting to see how well that holds up. And then you've also got sort of set pieces, like there was like a three-quarter segment with like horse riding or something that was shown off that people didn't have that many great things to say about, but you know, they are going to have some sort of I don't know whether it's going to be a particularly good thing, but they are going to have some segments going to break up the standard action.
Well, you know, it's not made in Japan because you can't gamble on it.
And you get the Street Pass functionality, which is used to open up sort of challenge levels. Which are, I think, you know, they've got a sort of more abstract kind of visual style. And apparently some of them are really quite hard. And some of you play like where it's like one hit kill, sort of like the old games, whereas typically you've got a health bar or whatever. So sounds like it could be, you know, the kind of game that I really like, but bit of a different thing for Kryptonite. You know, as a straight action game, so I'm not sure how it's going to turn out yet, but there's some pedigree here, so I've got an eye on it. And in terms of when it, again, the timing's not great for me picking this up at launch when you're going to have to drop a, you know, over here it's coming out, I believe, the week before Zelda and Mario 3D Land.
Just marathon it, it'd be fine.
Drop at the same time. So, but in terms of financially, you know, it's going to be immediately before a very large dent is made.
Need a loan and a lot of time.
I think, depending on reviews, I will get to it eventually. And then there's another 3DS game that I've had my eye on, which is very old-school minded, which is Cave Story 3D. Now, I have not yet played Cave Story, believe it or not.
I have not either.
Much of the reason for that is because I would like to play it portably. So there was this sort of absurd thing with the WiiWare version over here that it took an absolute age for it to come out in the PAL shop compared to in the US shop. And by the time it did, I knew that it was coming to DSiWare as well. I was like, well, I'll have a 3DS. I could get it on DSiWare eventually. Maybe I'd prefer to go that way. Because this sort of game, as I've played your stuff like the Metroids on GBA, obviously, Aliens that I spoke about today, I enjoy playing this kind of game portably, and especially on DS with the map there on the lower screen as well. Right. I do like that with, you know, the DS Castlevanias and so forth. So I'm quite sold on the idea of playing it portably, but it isn't out on the DSiWare in Europe yet either.
Seriously?
No, it isn't. Whoa. And in fact, the most recent quarterly release schedule had it pegged for quarter four, the same quarter.
I hope it comes out the same week.
In which Cave Story 3D will be coming out. So I've been waiting for one portable version and then two are going to come at once. And, you know, one is three times the price of the other. So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of breaks down as a value proposition. Obviously, Cave Story 3D has completely redone graphics there. Now, all the environments are redone in polygonal.
And they look really good. And they look completely different and really good.
Well, because they're not sprite-based. I mean...
Right. So it just took... The game, it's like a completely different game. Like, the layouts are the same, but this is like an HD remake to the extreme. You know, it looks so different that it's almost unfamiliar, even though the levels are technically the same. It's a really strange experience if you've already played the original.
Yeah, see, that's it. I mean, for me, I won't have that, but I mean, just looking at media fresh, it looks good. I think the one thing I notice is how much more you kind of get the sense of being in a sort of subterranean environment.
Yeah.
Because of the depth in the backgrounds, the different layers, and all that. Obviously, it's more built out of polygonal graphics now. It looks nice, so yeah, I might be swayed to pay the full retail price for this version, depending on what people sort of make of it and reviews. And it does have apparently some extra hidden areas in the levels that already existed for more items, and that, you know, there will be more pickups than there were before. So I mean, I don't think it's going to be a great deal of extra content or extra modes or anything. Although one thing apparently, this is obviously quite a trivial thing, but apparently the DSiWare version, you do have the map on the bottom screen, but you can only see it if you pause the game, which somewhat defeats the purpose of it. I know, isn't that weird? But look. Yeah. looking at video footage that I think probably Jared took of the game. That is not the case with Cave Story 3D. That map will be there running while you're actually playing the game.
It might be a hardware thing.
I don't know. But again, it's something I'm very interested in. It's coming out the week before the deluge of Nintendo stuff, so it's going to be tough to say whether I could get to it straight away. But this is the sort of game that I absolutely love playing portably.
Oh, Greg, you will love this game.
I've been waiting. I've been remarkably patient, I think, actually.
Yes, you have. You have. You will love this game. So your patience will be rewarded. I mean, assuming that the 3DS version turns out to be totally solid, and I think it will. Cave Story's awesome, and it's totally your kind of game, and you will love it.
Yeah, very, very excited about the prospect of playing that in one way. You know, if the 3DS version, you know, doesn't quite deliver, then there is the DSiWare version to fall back on. I think that's that seems like it's a pretty solid way of experiencing the game portably. Now, there's a few, on that note, there are some downloadable games I'd like to mention just briefly, sort of in our honourable mentions category, in large part because as they are games being released on Nintendo's digital platforms, their release dates are not exactly set in stone, so these may well fall out of the purview of this segment. But Mighty Switch Force, we've spoken about before, is kind of supposed to be coming out this year. WayForward, 3DS eShop original game with the different layers and the sort of 2D sprite work, sort of a bit Contra-ish, but a bit puzzle-solving in there. That looks cool. You've got Mutant Muds from Renegade Kid, the guys who did Dementium and all that.
Yeah, I thought that was supposed to come out already.
Yeah, well, this is it with Nintendo downloadable stuff.
I think they thought it was going to come out already, and
right. Well, maybe it just got delayed. But I mean, when we saw that, you know, we heard about that before E3, and we kind of thought that was going to be maybe the very first 3DS eShop exclusive game. Instead, we got Let's Golf 3D. But
hey, don't step, son.
So I mean, when exactly it'll be coming out is a bit of a mystery. But that certainly, there's quite a lot of stuff out there on that game already for people. You know, it seems quite encouraging. A few other things: La Mulana is, you know, very Cave Story ish from the point of view. You know, it's another sort of indie game that I think Nicholas have taken on, and you know, the WiiWare version's been out in Japan already. Seems like it's really good. That's meant to be coming at some point before the end of the year, I believe. We have also a late entry into this category, about as late as it could possibly get, because today there was the announcement that VVV is going to be coming to 3DS before the end of the year.
Oh, yes. What? Really? Oh, like as a download?
Yes.
Oh, dude.
eShop game. Nicholas again. The same people as La Mulana, Cave Story.
Oh, Tyrone. I need to shake that man's hand the next time I see him.
This is their milieu, apparently, as I'm bringing some of those.
See, if you were getting the email, Johnny, you would have seen that.
That is fantastic news. Let me tell you right now. I talked about this last Christmas, right after New Year's. VVVVVVV is an amazing game, and it is totally Nintendo in style. In gameplay, it is going to make a lot of Nintendo fans very, very, very happy, and I'm not a double dipper, but I will fucking double dip on this game to play it portably.
Absolutely.
I'm totally in on it.
Yeah, it looks so awesome. It's so ridiculous. The graphics are so terrible, but God bless it.
Yeah,
it's so great.
It looks like it's basically like an Atari 2600 game, and it's fucking hard, and it's ingenious. It is an amazing game. Also, some of the best game music I've ever heard. Some of the best chiptune music ever made. You guys are going to love this. I'm so glad this is coming to 3DS, because you guys are going to just flip your shit when you get to try it.
Nice. This is exciting stuff.
Oh, man. That left me on a high note. I think we should end it there. All right, some non-Nintendo platform stuff. Who wants to go first?
I have nothing.
Really? Nothing?
I've not been following it well enough, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't got a lot, really. I mean, obviously, it was quite a few big releases, but a lot of the stuff I'm not that interested in. But Arkham City, I would imagine, like a lot of people, is something I've been looking forward to for quite a while.
I've had my copy ordered for months.
Yeah, this is going to be a very rare day one PlayStation 3 purchase for me, because I did buy the original Arkham Asylum as quickly as I might have done.
Yeah,
but you know, when I did, I really enjoyed it. Apart from the sort of slightly iffy ending, it was really excellent, as most people seem to agree. So the sequel with the, you know, it seems like they're adding, you know, quite considerably to the scope of the game.
Mm-hmm. Dude, you can fly in that game.
It's Super Mario World style as well. You know, it's
like, yeah, with the cape. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy.
So that, yeah, that's pretty obvious one. The slightly less obvious in terms of the prominence, but that probably should be pretty obvious considering who's saying it. Pixel Junk side scroller, if that's gonna make it this year again, digital stuff.
Actually, I think it's coming out in like a month. It's due out really. It's like at the end of the PSN sort of summer, fall of arcade, or whatever they're calling it. It's supposed to come out in weeks, mere weeks.
I hope so, because I mean that looks great, doesn't it? And you know, I mean,
it's basically fake vector graphics, so you know I'm on board. It looks like a Vectrex game from my dreams. So,
and it's a scrolling shooter, up, which I actually really like that genre. I mean, you know, I enjoyed Pixel Junk Shooter, but that's obviously like a twin stick thing that's very slow paced, kind of relaxing. Whereas this is going to be more your kind of balls to the wall action style. I'm interested to see, you know, what kind of wrinkles they can put on that basic kind of gameplay. But even if they don't do too much with it, with the graphic style and presumably some good, you know, solid level design, all that kind of stuff, I'm always amenable to playing that kind of game. So I don't think this could go too far wrong.
Yeah. I agree. And I mean, the wrinkle that, at least one wrinkle, is that they're putting in the fluid physics stuff from Shooter. So to integrate that into a very fast-paced side-scrolling shoot 'em up, I think is clever, and it could work really, really well.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I'm going to be all over that when it comes out.
You sound excited, John.
Hey, if you're a fan of Star Fox 64 3D, then you should be checking out some Pixel Junk stuff. A lot of it is very, very good. And I think this is the most exciting one of all to me.
Yeah, for me too.
So, and I got to play it a little bit at E3, and I thought it was pretty badass.
It makes me giddy, definitely.
Yeah.
I will say that much.
Look, if you don't believe, I know it's a terrible name, go watch a video of Pixel Junk Side Scroller and tell me that you don't think it looks awesome.
Yeah,
tell me. Send me an email. I want to hear from you, person with terrible taste.
And I'll come to your house and punch you right in the face.
That's right.
Shut up, John. Fuck.
All right, John, what are you looking forward to?
Kind of touched on them already. Definitely Uncharted 3, but also Dark Souls. I'm going to pick that up after conquering Demon Souls. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So he'll never get that, is what you're telling us.
Let's see. Arkham City. For sure. I haven't really been following too much on 360, really. I mean, the big games are...
It's the standard bro-y stuff this year.
It is.
Well, there's Skyrim. Are you down for Skyrim, John?
Nah.
I am. That was my big pick, actually.
It's Skyrim, a bunch of shooters, and Forza. That's the 360 lineup this year.
As far as Skyrim goes, I play MMOs, so... I haven't really been too much into
Sean
the...
Sean doesn't need a fake MMO. He has a real one.
No, but I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, that game will take, like, 100 hours, 200 hours of your time.
Yeah. 8,000 hours.
That's a big game to go in there. And it's just, like, I have a hard time playing games like that just by myself now.
In addition to playing MMOs on a consistent basis.
Right. See, I can play Skyrim because I don't play MMOs.
But segue of the Old Republic, are you going to, like, blow off your family Christmas for that or whatever they're asking you to do?
Absolutely no Christmas this year.
assuming that game actually does come out.
Oh, it'll come out. I mean, they've already committed the date.
Let me rephrase that. Assuming this game comes out in a finished form.
Yeah, well,
you know what, John? I might be doing that with you. I probably won't get into Old Republic right away, but I'm keeping a very close eye on it. This might be my first MMO, people. And I said this on a previous episode. It got cut out, unfortunately. But I have decided that I want to play Knights of the Old Republic before I play the Old Republic. And so I have it on Steam. I bought a super cheap copy. I haven't started playing it yet. But I've wanted to play that game for a long time. And I think I'm going to go whole hog on the BioWare Star Wars stuff.
Well, the thing is, a lot of the big thing with MMOs is that you have to actually really kind of love the world to actually spend that much time in it, right? Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't like WoW, if you don't like their whole storyline, all that kind of thing, you're just not really going to stay. You're not going to play it that long because you're eventually going to get sick of it. So, Star Wars is going to be big for a lot of people that typically wouldn't play it otherwise.
Right, and that's what they're counting on.
Well, it's not like it's the first Star Wars MMO, but it might be the first good one.
Right. And you brought it up earlier, but I am totally in for Skyrim. Elder Scrolls V. I've never played an Elder Scrolls game, but I did, and I've never really played a Bethesda game, but I did play Fallout New Vegas, which was made by a different company, Obsidian. And I liked New Vegas a lot. It's a broken-ass game. It has tons of issues, but the core, there's enough meat on the bone that's really compelling. And there was a lot about that game that I found very difficult to put down.
Just eat around the rotten bits.
So the and even though I don't like that setting at all, I'm not a post-apocalyptic kind of a guy. I don't find that very interesting. So the idea of putting that in a fantasy world that I think will be a lot more bright and cheerful and appealing to me, you know, I like dragons just as much as the next guy. So I like them a lot more than like robot cowboy dudes with and zombies. So I'm much more interested in the setting for this and the fact that it's on a new engine. And they've been developing it for a very long time, since Fallout 3 came out like 3 years ago. So I'm pretty excited about this. And, you know, just based on my experience with New Vegas, I think this is going to be, it's not going to fix everything, but it's going to address all the things I didn't like about New Vegas. And it's going to be almost like the anti-Zelda. Like, it's, in some ways, it is very much related to Zelda, and probably inspired by Zelda in some key ways, and yet it's going to play just, it's so deep and crazy complicated and just, like, grognard as hell, and...
Did you just say grognard?
It's not the fun... He said that quite recently.
Yeah. It's a fun word. And that way I get that and Zelda, like, I think they come out, like, pretty much the same week, and so I sort of get both sides of the coin, you know? Like, it's perfect. So I want it both ways, and I'm very excited about Skyrim. Surprisingly, like the more I hear about it, the more I'm interested in it. And a couple years ago, I'd been surprised if you told me that, but totally, I can't stop thinking about it actually.
Well, all those games in that series are really, really good.
All right, well, obviously there are a lot of very exciting games coming out. We'll see how they pan out, but we're going to be playing them all, and we'll let you know what we think about them. You let us know what you think about them once they come out. The email address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can also go to the website and go to the article, and there'll be a link there. You can use that instead if you don't want to type in the email address. This is the last chance to vote on Retroactive. If you want to have a say in the next game that we play on this show, now is the time. This episode comes out about 3 days before the voting deadline.
It's Thursday, by the way.
Yeah, the voting deadline will be Thursday. We've had really good participation so far, and I'm expecting this to be one of our most successful ever. I think it's an interesting set of games. There's not an obvious winner, which is what we were going for. And so I think there's some interesting choices there. And, you know, if you're not initially predisposed to one of the three games, then go in the thread and read what other people are saying, and maybe they'll convince you one of those ways. That's totally legit. So typically the number of votes we get in these polls is a small fraction of the number of listeners we have, and I really want to ask everybody, if you care about what we talk about on the show, take 2 seconds to go over to the site and vote in the poll, and let's get some real participation here, because this is a really fun feature. If you've never really played along before, if you've never really voted and gotten invested in the outcome, I think this is a really good time to start. So check it out, Retroactive. You can vote for Customer Robo Arena, Mario Tennis Power Tour, or River City Ransom. And they're all three look to be really interesting games. And we're going to play one of those, and you can help us decide which one. Head over there right now, please, and cast your vote. And we'll let you know next week what the result is. All right, that's going to wrap up the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Later.
We have stuff to talk about. Games aren't out yet, maybe, depending on when you're listening to this.
That's a hell of a fucking audition tape for Hives, James. I'll strongly consider that.
It's on the holidays, 2011, in case you're wondering when we recorded this.
Say with
this.
Me, James, it's the podcast, people.
That's what you're going up against, James.
I want to impress Greg, that's it.
Welcome to RFN. Oh, wait, we already did that. Oh, you released a Layton game that you telling us isn't good? Layton and the We're Not Really Trying Anymore. Well, okay, I'll take it, but I'm not happy about it.
But it turns out at the very end that they all really were trying very hard the whole time. And also, the city you've been exploring is underwater.
It's imaginary.
No, it wasn't underwater. It was just blue sticky tape.
And it's floating through space.
It is Leighton 4, so it should be in space if we go on the Leprechaun
timeline.
And Hellraiser.
Hellraiser, yeah.